Good afternoon, I'm Dennis Vitorian, and welcome to 2021. This is the 25th hour. A quick note before we begin. This week we saw an attack on our United States Capitol, incited by the President of the United States, in a massive breach the country hasn't seen since 1812. The American experiment has seen its fair share of tragedies, from slavery to a botched reconstruction, to a civil war, to immigrant xenophobia, to world wars, to presidential assassinations, to the killings of segregated black Americans, to 9/11. The list is by no means exhaustive, but we won't be either. We'll get through this moment and persevere just like the righteous American spirit has done before. If you have something you'd like to vent to us, you can email us at the25thhournews@gmail.com. Now, in this week's news for the week of January 3rd to 9th, 2021, de Blasio begged for the governor to let him vaccinate people while Cuomo drags his feet into the last possible second. Trump incited an insurrection against the United States Capitol, and Congress certified Biden's Electoral College win anyway and can now add a second time impeachment on their plate. Now, on to the show. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Starting with de Blasio's administration, the city's COVID positivity rate is now over 9%, with six Bronx zip codes landing in the top 25 zip codes with the highest weekly positivity rating. Mayor Bill de Blasio started off the week making a comment on why vaccines aren't being distributed fast enough, with politicians such as Councilman Mark Levine pointing out that there wasn't a 24/7 effort to inoculate people. Even though de Blasio took part of the blame for the city's own slow rollout, he ultimately lays blame on the state and his usual debate partner, Governor Cuomo, which de Blasio got into a sparring match with on Twitter.
The mayor defended hospitals, saying they need more flexibility.
What they don't need is to be shamed. What they don't need is more bureaucracy. What they don't need is the threat of fines. Health and Hospitals has been taking a vaccine for lots of different folks and hasn't been able to vaccinate everyone they would like to. Obviously, those are challenges. Plus, some of their supply just came in.
The New York Times reported that more than half of the vaccines in New York City sat in freezers for 2 weeks, while some unused doses were thrown out. City jail health officials started to inoculate medical staff after receiving permission from the state, days after confusion abounded about exactly who would be vaccinated and when that would be. Home health aides and police officers are allowed to be inoculated now as well, days after the state denied de Blasio's attempt at inoculating the entire police force by labeling them as medical first responders. The mayor had originally announced that those who are eligible for the vaccine have now expanded, asking for the state to help the city administer doses. Separately, one of the more curious news items involved something that is normal for when there isn't a pandemic raging through the city: lack of parking spaces. As more people have bought cars to avoid the buses and subways, parking spaces are few and far between. A report by the Independent Budget Office formalized the conclusion that the pandemic will cost the city in the long term for years in areas of tax revenue and economic growth. A small group within the United Federation of Teachers called the Solidarity Caucus is calling for schools to be all remote until the virus dies down, no matter the threshold. The UFT is now calling for schools to shut down after passing a 9% threshold, but the city's past that point already. With the pandemic causing concerns about health and working conditions, retirement applications among teachers increased 64% by the end of 2020. Parents are coming down on the education department to find out what the plans are for the gifted and talented programs in elementary schools, skeptical that the agency simply wants to get rid of the program because of the pandemic. On January 21st, the MTA is coming together to decide whether there should be another fare hike, which we're sure will just land in welcome arms in the middle of a pandemic. The MTA also asked de Blasio for more police officers to be stationed in the subways, as attacks on the subway have increased. In other transportation news, a water main exploded in the Bronx, causing ripple effects and standstill traffic all the way to the George Washington Bridge and flooding surrounding neighborhoods. Eric Adams proposed a new policy where community groups would be the ones to choose new police precinct commanders. Eric Adams is the Brooklyn Borough President running for mayor. Turns out that Max Rose won't just run for mayor after all, although he gave no reasons as to why he wasn't jumping into the race. Sean Donovan this week joined the chorus of mayoral hopefuls wanting to get rid of middle school admissions tests, but when it came to the SHSAT, the specialized high school admissions test, he said he wants to just change it, not get rid of it. Andrew Yang, the former presidential candidate who's inserting new excitement into the mayoral race for his impending addition, has been hit with attack pieces based on his non-existent voting record in NYC and the fact that he was one of the New Yorkers that allegedly escaped the city during the pandemic. Meanwhile, in the race for comptroller replacing Scott Stringer, State Senator Brian Benjamin was found to have been receiving donations via a middleman named Michael Murphy. Interestingly enough, at least three of the donors never heard of Senator Benjamin, and one of the donors is a toddler. Benjamin became the target of another article that pointed out he's receiving a high salary from a company led by a Wall Street executive who himself played a role in the 2008 Wall Street crash. Southern Brooklyn Democratic District Leader Lori Maslow is being asked to resign by fellow party members after her tweets disparaging Chinese people. Specifically, Maslow tweeted that she wouldn't buy anything made in China again and that she, quote, can't even look at Chinese food. Party members and leaders quickly criticized Maslow, who deleted the tweet and announced her resignation as a vice chair on the Democratic County Committee. Public advocate Jamani Williams nominated tenant advocate Sia Weaver to the City Planning Commission. Weaver is a campaign coordinator for Housing Justice for All, a tenants' rights group coalition in New York State. The 13-member commission is responsible for overseeing the development of housing, business, industry, transportation, recreation, culture, and healthcare in New York City. Queens' new deputy borough president resigned after their tweets criticizing Israeli policies and lobbying were examined. Director of Food Access and Agriculture at Grow NYC, Michael Hurwitz, was chosen to serve under the Queens borough president Donovan Richards, but his tweet directed at the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, or APAC, alleged that the group essentially bribes Congress in exchange for pro-settlement policies. A Brooklyn neighborhood had a weird experiment where they pulled back cops entirely for 5 days, and only one 911 call was made. The mayor gave his approval for the five-day experiment. According to Patch.com, cops from Brownsville's 73rd Precinct withdrew from their posts at Mother Gaston Boulevard for 5 days as Violence Interrupter and Crisis Management Groups watched over a two-block zone between Pitkin and Sutter Avenues, and only one 911 call was made in that five-day span. Louis Schenker, a Queens native known to spread conspiracy theories on his podcast, was arrested after placing a hoax bomb in a Tesla at the Queens Place Mall. A cell phone video captured an NYPD officer kneeling on a black man's neck in a misdemeanor arrest on January 2nd, giving triggers of George Floyd's death, and the mayor demanded answers from the NYPD. The mayor has historically acted angry in the face of police indiscretion, but ends up not instituting disciplinary measures. 2020 saw a rise in homicides and shootings, with the NYPD saying its resources were stretched thin due to the pandemic, but critics say that the NYPD severely decreased its number of arrests after jail reform laws were put in place and police protests flared up in the summer. Two arrests were made at a protest in front of Trump Tower after Trump incited a mob to attack the U.S. Capitol, as we go into a little bit further, and a Confederate flag was found taped to the door of the Manhattan Museum of Jewish Heritage. A technical glitch last month prevented prisoners from meeting their lawyers or families and left some detainees on Rikers through the holidays. Advocates are calling for transparency in prison COVID plans after the deaths of six inmates in December alone. The Queens Defenders, the Criminal Public Defender Legal Group, has decided to unionize among its staff, but a disagreement with management has forced a future union election to be administered by the National Labor Relations Board. Moving on to the City Council, Sheepshead Bay in southern Brooklyn is up in arms about a proposed homeless shelter in their backyard. A petition spread around on Facebook seeks to prevent the homeless shelter from moving forward, with City Councilman Chaim Deutsch saying he's opposing the proposed single male homeless shelter on the basis of the nonprofit Core Group having a bad track record with their existing homeless shelters. Deutsch said he's asking for the city to hold off on the shelter until he inspects the nonprofit shelters, which number over 100. Two Bronx City Council seats vacated by Richie Torres and Andrew Cohen, who have went on to become a congressman and a judge respectively, are set for March 23rd, the mayor announced. Moving on to Cuomo. Cuomo said the mutated variant of COVID has arrived in New York. The governor himself said that he won't get the vaccine until it's available for all races and income groups. New York ended up exceeding 1 million confirmed cases this week since the start of the pandemic. Public health experts are calling for a sped-up vaccine rollout as hospitals are overwhelmed and haven't been vaccinating people fast enough, even though Cuomo blamed hospitals and localities, including Mayor de Blasio, for the slow rollout and threatened fines if vaccinations don't happen fast enough.
This is a management issue of the hospitals. They have to move the vaccine, and they have to move the vaccine faster.
The governor tartly pointed out that the City Health and Hospitals Corporation distributed just 31% of the vaccine doses it was given. He also singled out Nassau University Medical Center, which gave out just 19% of its doses, and Westchester Medical Center, 32% distributed.
I'm impatient that it has been 3 weeks and the vaccines haven't been administered. I am impatient.
County leaders tried to implore with the governor that the rollout was stumbling because of a hospital-run approach rather than a regional one. The governor's office has assured counties that they would be involved with the vaccine rollout, and Cuomo has asked public service unions, including police and fire departments, along with other large unions, to assist getting their members vaccinated. Ultimately, Cuomo ended up expanding eligibility into groups allowed to get the vaccine by 3 million more people, including seniors 75 and older. After receiving major blowback, Northwell Health, the largest health system in New York, announced it'll stop suing patients for medical debt in the midst of the pandemic, while other health systems suspended filing those suits from the get-go. Northwell sued about 2,500 people. Cuomo separately launched an investigation into Montefiore New Rochelle Hospital for ignoring state rules and giving government workers the vaccine who weren't eligible for it. Meanwhile, nurse Sandra Lindsay, who was the first person in New York State to get vaccinated, received her booster shot this week, completing her full vaccine regimen. Cuomo called on the Border Patrol to require international travelers to test negative before coming back into the U.S., or to allow the Port Authority to take on that responsibility at least. After much criticism, Cuomo is abandoning his plan to attend the Buffalo Bills playoff game this weekend after 40,000 people signed a petition, giving his ticket to a nurse instead. Cuomo heralded a plan to allow a severely reduced amount of people into the Bills stadium as petitioners pointed to his policies reducing how many people can be inside one's home. Not one to miss the opportunity, State Senator Jim Todisco called on Cuomo to release data on any COVID spread following the Buffalo Bills game. Empire State Development Corp., the state's business development agency, teamed up with some companies to create a $3 million grant meant for restaurants hurt by the pandemic, with eligible businesses receiving upwards of $5,000 each. As we go into detail a bit later, President Trump incited an insurrection against the U.S. Capitol. As the world watched in horror at the bewilderingly low number of police officers and a delayed National Guard response, Cuomo sent 1,000 New York National Guards to assist in maintaining the Capitol campus. Two people were stabbed at a pro-Trump rally in Albany this week as well. New concrete barriers were installed at the Albany Capitol building to prevent the same attack on the U.S. Capitol. As some of the terrorists were being rounded up and arrested by the FBI, there were surprises about some of the people in the crowd. One of them was the son of a prominent Brooklyn judge, Shlomo Mostovsky, who denied knowledge of his son ever traveling to D.C. for the Trump demonstrations, and a Queens Republican who lost her bid most recently to unseat State Senator John Liu. The mayor of Bath, New York, Michael Sweet, was also seen in videos being in D.C. for the demonstrations, but he insists he wasn't present at the Capitol. Cuomo has called on Trump to resign. Cuomo reversed his earlier policy about how long schools can remain open if there's a high COVID positivity rate, instead letting every school in the state stay open even if the county blows past the 9% threshold. The state also reduced the amount of days students and staff should quarantine if exposed to the virus to 10 days from 14 following CDC guidance. Long Island teachers topped the list of the most well-paid public employees in the state outside of New York City, with Newsday reporting that a Central Islip teacher took home more than $500,000 last year. The MTA said that it plans to expand rail capacity on the LIRR, and it's still on track despite the interruptions caused by the pandemic, with this particular project costing $2.6 billion. The state's 52 prisons are seeing COVID outbreaks everywhere, with 9 prisoners having died in the past 3 weeks and more than 1,000 prisoners infected. After hesitating to come on board, Cuomo has announced that he will make online sports betting one of his adopted policy proposals in next week's State of the State address. Another policy Cuomo is trying to finally get on board with is recreational marijuana, after momentum in the state was finally too hard to deny. Cuomo proposed a new office to regulate the weed market and offered licensing opportunities for the communities that were most affected from discriminatory drug laws. Joining the other policies at the State of the State is a package of voting reform laws that would expedite the use of mail-in ballots in New York State starting this year. Other proposals include domestic violence and gender-based violence prevention initiatives, including making abusers pay the cost of housing damage and moving expenses for the abused. Cuomo signed a law that will allow drivers to set up payment plans instead of paying for a ticket in a lump sum. The new law aims to prevent license suspensions because of a driver's inability to pay a debt. While the pandemic has thrown the state into a budget spiral and businesses closed left and right, the minimum wage increase to $15 is still going into effect despite some businesses claiming they won't be able to afford the wage increase. Only 2% of Nassau's contracts went to minority and women-owned firms in the past 6 years. Nassau County is located in Long Island, and more information is becoming readily available showing that women and minority-owned businesses are last in line to receive any sort of government assistance during the pandemic, but in general are also very low on the totem pole when it comes to receiving government contracts. Moving on to Albany, 39 state senators have signed on to a letter asking the acting U.S. Attorney General to investigate President Trump and hold him accountable for the Capitol insurrection that happened this week. Even though the same bill for the past 6 years hasn't made it through the floor, New York Republicans are pointing to a measure that would establish detention camps for those with COVID who refuse to quarantine or vaccinate, spreading conspiracy theories for political gain. Meanwhile, Democrats and union leaders are calling for legislation that would mandate workplace safety standards to address worker safety during the pandemic. New York State Republicans plan to unveil their Reset New York plan just in time for Cuomo's State of the State next week, hoping to advertise policies they say will prevent more New Yorkers from leaving the city and repealing progressive measures. State Senator James Sanders Jr. received a $15,000 fine for accepting free meals and trips paid for by a nonprofit he promoted in the city council, which also received taxpayer funds. The start of the new year brought the start of a new session in Albany, with it being the quietest in years according to Political New York, as members just adopted rules of procedure. Moving on to the state courts, continuing the Jeff Klein saga, the former state senator who was accused of forcibly kissing an aide argued in court that the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, the public corruption arm of New York, has no jurisdiction to investigate him. The court case revolving over who won in the upstate House race between Claudia Tenney and Anthony Brindisi is still underway 2 months after Election Day. The judge is reviewing about 2,500 ballots that were challenged, with Tenney leading Brindisi by 29 ballots. A judge denied opponents of a busway in Flushing, Queens, allowing plans to move forward on a delayed transportation proposal that opposers say will cut the public approval process from future transport schemes. A state appeals court gave the single homeless man at the Lucerne even more time to stay there, saying the hotel's residents can be rest assured they won't be kicked to the curb as the case goes through the court system. Separately, the city agreed to not move homeless residents of the Blue Moon Hotel on the Lower East Side before February 9th as neighbors pursue a lawsuit. Tenants from a Dean Street apartment building are seeking to join in a lawsuit against several city landlords, alleging claims of illegal evictions and harassment. Moving on to Trump. On Wednesday, the president, after weeks of inviting demonstrators to assemble in Washington, D.C. to protest the presidential election, made a speech to those demonstrators telling them to march on the Capitol while lawmakers were certifying Biden's Electoral College win. Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, also spoke to the crowd and said trial by combat was needed.
We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved. Our country has had enough. We will not take it anymore. And that's what this is all about. And to use a favorite term that all of you people really came up with, we will stop the steal. Today, I will lay out just some of the evidence proving that we won this election and we won it by a landslide. This was not a close election. You know, I say sometimes jokingly, but there's no joke about it. I've been in two elections. I won them both. And the second one, I won much bigger than the first. Okay? Almost 75 million people voted for our campaign, the most of any incumbent president by far in the history of our country. 12 million more people than 4 years ago. And I was told by the real pollsters — we do have real pollsters, they know that we were going to do well and we were going to win — but I was told if I went from 63 million, which we had 4 years ago, to 66 million, there was no chance of losing. Well, we didn't go to 66, we went to 75 million, and they say we lost. We didn't lose. Now it is up to Congress to confront this egregious assault on our democracy. And after this, we're going to walk down, and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down. We're going to walk down. Anyone you want, but I think right here, we're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them. Because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong.
What ensued was something unprecedented in American history, as Capitol Police inexplicably gave way to rioters who then broke the doors and windows of the Capitol, taking over congressional offices and defiling the floor of the U.S. Senate. Congress members and senators were whisked away along with the Electoral College votes to an undisclosed location as Trump supporters rampaged through the federal Capitol. The entire episode lasted about 4 hours, and one woman who was part of the terroristic mob was shot in the neck and killed by police. Her name was Ashley Babbitt, a former Air Force veteran who had a history of social media posts highlighting QAnon conspiracy theories. A day later, Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick died following a head injury he received from one of the terrorists hitting him with a fire extinguisher. Three other people died in unrelated medical episodes, according to the Capitol Police. Police recovered numerous weapons and found pipe bombs at the headquarters of the Republican National Committee and Democratic National Committee. Biden came out and gave a speech demanding a stop to the attacks on the Capitol and called for the president to demand his supporters to withdraw.
At this hour, our democracy is under an unprecedented assault, unlike anything we've seen in modern times. An assault on the citadel of liberty, the Capitol itself. An assault on the people's representatives, and the Capitol Hill police, sworn to protect them, and the public servants who work at the heart of our republic. An assault on the rule of law like few times we've ever seen it. Let me be very clear. The scenes of chaos at the Capitol do not reflect a true America, do not represent who we are. I call on this mob
to pull back and allow the work of democracy to go forward. You've heard me say before in different contexts, the words of a president matter, no matter how good or bad that president is. At their best, the words of a president can inspire. At their worst, they can incite. And therefore, I call on President Trump to go on national television now to fulfill his oath and defend the Constitution and demand an end to this siege. I am genuinely shocked and saddened that our nation, so long the beacon of light and hope for democracy, has come to such a dark moment.
The president shortly released a video of him on the White House grounds telling his supporters to, quote, to go home, but then repeated the same claims of fraud that are unfounded and that were used to incite the insurrection on the Capitol. The president also said to his supporters that he loves them and that they're special.
I know your pain. I know you're hurt. We had an election that was stolen from us. It was a landslide election, and everyone knows it, especially the other side. But you have to go home now. We have to have peace. We have to have law and order. We have to respect our great people in law and order. We don't want anybody hurt. It's a very tough period of time. There's never been a time like this where such a thing happened, where they could take it away from all of us, from me, from you, from our country. This was a fraudulent election, but we can't play into the hands of these people. We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special. You've seen what happens. You see the way others are treated that are so bad and so evil. I know how you feel. But go home and go home in peace.
Most of the domestic terrorists were allowed to just walk off the Capitol campus with a small number of individuals arrested. Lawmakers re-entered the legislative chambers and resumed their work with Vice President Pence, who chaired his ceremonial role as the certifier of the Electoral College votes, telling his colleagues it was time to keep going. As we detail a bit later, lawmakers certified Biden's victory despite some Republicans still challenging the results, hinging on baseless claims. A number of Trump officials resigned their posts after the attack on the Capitol, citing the episode directly as the reason why they couldn't continue on with the administration. Mark Meadows, one of Trump's former chiefs of staff and his former OMB director and chair of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Elaine Chao, transportation secretary and Mitch McConnell's wife, Matthew Pottinger, deputy national security advisor, and Stephanie Grisham, Melania Trump's chief of staff, all resigned. Trump's former attorney general Bill Barr and other former officials shamed Trump for the incident. Trump pulled back the nomination of Chad Wolf, who he picked to lead the Department of Homeland Security after Wolf criticized the president for the attack on the Capitol. Members of both parties blamed the president for his incitement of his supporters' insurrection, with Democratic leaders Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi asking to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove Trump and beginning to put impeachment on the table starting Monday. The 25th Amendment could be used to remove a sitting president against their will if they're unfit to serve, but has never been used in this context in American history. Stephen Sund, the chief of Capitol Police, handed in his letter of resignation effective January 16th, while questions flared up about how Capitol Police let Trump supporters march into the Capitol building. The Senate and House Sergeant-at-Arms had also handed in their letters of resignation. Also following the insurrection, social media platforms such as Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, and Trump's beloved Twitter have permanently banned the president from their platforms, citing a need to safeguard against further incitement to violence. The president attempted to tweet from different Twitter profiles, but they would all be swiftly banned after Twitter cited numerous violations to their rules. As some of you may know, the First Amendment does not apply to private companies. The social media site Parler has also seen itself being removed from the servers of Google, Apple, and Amazon for failing to moderate its content, which has been used as a space to plot the insurrection on the Capitol as well as other past right-wing attacks. Before he was banned from Twitter, Trump confirmed he wasn't going to attend Biden's inauguration, a first in nearly 150 years. Mike Pence, however, said he would attend. In Biden's announcement of Merrick Garland as his new attorney general, he pointed out, as many others have started to, at the double standard regarding how Black Lives Matter protesters were treated by Capitol Police, and how Trump terrorists were treated themselves. Biden's words were direct, calling the Trump supporters that breached the Capitol domestic terrorists.
But what we witnessed yesterday was not dissent, it was not disorder, it was not protest, it was chaos. They weren't protesters. Don't dare call them protesters. They were a riotous mob
insurrectionist, domestic terrorist. It's that basic, it's that simple. And I wish we could say we couldn't see it coming. But that isn't true. We could see it coming. The past 4 years, we've had a president who's made his contempt for our democracy, our Constitution, the rule of law clear in everything he has done. He unleashed an all-out assault on our institutions of our democracy from the outset. And yesterday was but the culmination of that unrelenting attack.
Biden went on to announce Garland as his new attorney general, along with other DOJ staff, marking a turning point for Garland, who was denied a hearing by Mitch McConnell and the Senate GOP for nearly a year after Obama nominated him to the Supreme Court. Biden also chose Lisa Monaco as deputy attorney general and Vanita Gupta in the DOJ number 3 spot. Kristen Clark was announced as head of the Civil Rights Division, moving away as president of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights under law. Biden tapped Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo for Commerce Secretary, a pro-business pick, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh as Labor Secretary, and Isabel Guzman to lead the Small Business Administration. Biden has everyone on his cabinet picked out besides CIA Director. And Biden might have to have acting secretaries on his cabinet for a period of time, as there's a delay caused by runoff elections in Georgia that will stave off Senate confirmations. Before things became at their worst with the attack on the Capitol, the Washington Post released an astounding recording of a phone call between President Trump and Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, with the president repeating his false claims and conspiracies surrounding the election, with Raffensperger and his attorney countering those claims. One of the more striking moments of the call was when Trump specifically asked Raffensperger to find him votes in order to reverse the result of the presidential election in Georgia, which wouldn't even win him the Electoral College if it were to happen.
So, look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes. So tell me, Brad, what are we going to do? We won the election, and it's not fair to take it away from us like this. And it's going to be very costly in many ways. And I think you have to say that you're going to reexamine it.
We have to stand by our numbers. We believe our numbers are right.
Georgia has now counted their ballots 3 times, declaring Mr. Biden the winner each time.
After the attack on the Capitol, it was revealed that Trump called a Georgia investigator personally to find the fraud, potentially throwing the president into legal jeopardy for obstructing justice, which wouldn't be the first time he was accused of the offense. Cleta Mitchell, one of the lawyers on the phone call with Trump urging Raffensperger to find votes for the president, resigned from her law firm Foley & Lardner LLP. Continuing the controversy in Georgia, the U.S. Attorney from North Georgia, Byung Park, abruptly resigned this week, citing unforeseen circumstances. The president went around the first deputy U.S. attorney who would normally take the resigning attorney's place and chose Bobby Christine, the U.S. attorney from the Southern District of Georgia. It was then reported that Pack was forced to resign because he refused to look into false allegations of election fraud in Georgia and refused to make up a pretext to investigate the fraud when it hasn't appeared. The TSA reported that there are still more than 1 million people traveling through the beginning of the new year, a troubling statistic when the country is still not out of the woods of the pandemic. The federal government might cut Moderna doses in half so that more people get vaccinated, according to Operation Warp Speed Chief Advisor Monsef Slaoui. Public health experts had earlier dismissed the idea of delaying the booster shots of the two-dose vaccines such as Pfizer. The CDC reported that about 5 million Americans have been inoculated, while 15 million doses have been distributed. Data released by the Paycheck Protection Program showed that minority-owned small businesses were last to receive loans from the CARES Act-created policy. While a mutated strain is popping up here and there throughout the country, it was reported that Dr. Deborah Birx of the COVID Task Force erroneously stated that the mutated strain is rampant throughout the U.S. and is responsible for the increased surge in infections and deaths following the holiday season. The U.S. Surgeon General and Dr. Fauci both had to contradict Trump this week about the COVID death toll in the U.S., saying there's no reason to doubt the CDC's death toll, while the president says the toll was exaggerated. The truth is that the count may be under-exaggerated, as it doesn't include those who didn't die in hospitals and underlying causes stemming from the virus. Biden's transition team said that the new president plans to release almost all of the second doses held back by the Trump administration in order to speed up vaccinations. All 10 living former defense secretaries penned an op-ed this week saying the election had been decided and warned against using the military in a political dispute. Former Vice President Dick Cheney, who was George Bush Sr.'s defense secretary, initiated the op-ed with the other defense secretaries. The letter included Trump's former defense secretaries, General Jim Mattis and Mark Esper. The fallout from the Russian hacking operation on numerous federal agencies and Fortune 500 companies continues, with analysts taking stock of the damage done and what potential information was compromised. Microsoft admitted that it was one of the companies hacked as part of the same Russian operation. FireEye, the cybersecurity firm which revealed the hack, said the hack was waged inside the U.S. on servers close to the target organizations. U.S. officials investigated the breach confirmed that hackers compromised fewer than 10 federal agencies. The statement was delayed by 2 weeks, but delayed because of the White House. The fallout also continues to fall about Trump's pardons, in which he pardoned many of his friends who were implicated in the Mueller-Russia investigation and the four Blackwater military contractors that were convicted of war crimes. Meanwhile, Trump is set to give Republican Congressman Jim Jordan and Devin Nunes the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian honor, for their defense of Trump during the Mueller investigation. Nunes particularly was the ranking member or the first Republican chair of the very committee investigating Trump, as Nunes visited Trump and gave him advance notice of the committee's actions. This week also saw Trump causing worries of a war with Iran, as the Pentagon had first ordered the aircraft carrier Nimitz into the Middle East, then ordered its retreat, then told it to stay after all. Acting Secretary of Defense Christopher Miller ordered the Nimitz to stay over the objections of military advisors. The Pentagon believed Iran would take retaliatory action, as it was a year since the U.S. caused death of Iran's top general Qasem Soleimani. The Environmental Protection Agency finalized a rule that would limit scientific assessment behind public health protections, requiring researchers to disclose raw data and studies before the agency can rely on the study's conclusions. Before everything hit the fan, Trump signed an executive order banning transactions with 8 Chinese apps, including Alipay, owned by Chinese billionaire Jack Ma, who's reportedly gone missing in China, saying that the apps can be used by the Chinese government to track locations of federal workers. The New York Stock Exchange flip-flopped this week in banning the Chinese companies from its exchange, but ultimately left them out after regulatory guidance made it clear the companies were meant to be banned. Moving on to Congress, in what is usually a normal process without much fanfare, 11 Republican senators and over 100 Republican House members challenged the certification of the Electoral College results based on conspiracy theories without evidence. The only thing the measure did was delay the certification, with Republicans planning to run for president in 2024, ready to use the certification opposition as political fodder. After the insurrection, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer called for the use of the 25th Amendment to get rid of Trump, and if that didn't happen, Pelosi said she's ready for her chamber to work on impeachment first thing Monday. Despite Trump having less than 2 weeks left as president, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell circulated a memo amongst his caucus that said an impeachment trial in the Senate wouldn't even start until January 19th, with any possible conviction only possible until after Biden gets inaugurated, which would distract the brand new administration seeking to move past Trump's chaotic reign. In the House, Nancy Pelosi was reelected as House Speaker on the thinnest of margins after the 2020 election established a narrow Democratic majority, with the vote coming out to 216 to 211. 5 Democrats voted against Pelosi, with the California Democrat saying this would be her last time running for Speaker. Pelosi is the first female Speaker of the House. Even after the assault on the Capitol by Trump supporters, Republicans, including Representative Elise Stefanik, objected to Biden's Electoral College certification. 3 other New York lawmakers also objected to Biden's certification, drawing ire from New Yorkers' incense that they would do that even after the Capitol was breached. Representative Zeldin Jacobs and the newly sworn-in Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis, not even a week into the job, were the ones who objected, following an episode where the New York delegation had to mark themselves safe on Facebook from a Trump mob. Newly elected Congressman Jamal Bowman introduced the COUP Act, which stands for the Congressional Oversight of Unjust Policing, seeking to investigate how it was possible that Capitol Police failed in holding back Trump supporters in their breach of the Capitol. Other lawmakers have called for an investigation, with some such as Jim Clyburn going so far as saying Capitol Police had insiders that allowed terrorists into the building. New York Representative Nydia Velazquez introduced a bill this week that would appropriate $70 billion in federal funds to repairing public housing across the nation. NYCHA in particular is in dire straits, with constant emphasis on the dilapidated housing that residents are forced to stay in, with much delayed responses. 3 Republican congressmen, Kevin Brady, Kay Granger, and Jake LaTurner, have tested positive for COVID this week. In the Senate, on January 5th, Georgia held its Senate elections, one with the incumbent David Perdue versus John Ossoff, and the special election to fill the 2-year remainder of retired Senator John Isaacson's term that Kelly Loeffler was appointed to temporarily hold until the election took place. After a razor-thin race, Reverend Raphael Warnock defeated Kelly Loeffler, and John Ossoff defeated David Perdue, becoming Georgia's first black and Jewish senators, respectively. Following the projection of Ossoff's win, New York Senator Chuck Schumer declared himself the new majority leader. Schumer will become New York's first Senate majority leader. In the judicial branch, the Census Bureau told Judge Lucy Koh of the U.S. District of Northern California that it expects to release new state population counts around February 9th, a delay caused, they say, because of anomalies, without explaining what that meant. Stephen Dillingham, the census director, said in November the anomalies are the same seen as past censuses, but reporting also points to Trump's efforts to exclude undocumented immigrants in the census count as being a possible reason for the delay. Dominion Voting Systems is planning legal action against Trump's lawyer Sidney Powell, who spread false legal theories in an effort to overturn the U.S. election. Dominion is claiming defamation and is planning for billions of dollars in relief. With Biden's victory, left-wing activists, including the group Demand Justice, are encouraging liberal Justice Stephen Breyer to retire so that Biden can nominate a younger liberal judge to the court. And finally, in national news, while the country reeled from the president's actions this week, news broke that 4,000 deaths were logged as the average daily death rate of COVID. The mutated strain that led to the shutdown of the UK landed in Colorado, then California, and as we mentioned earlier, in New York. The vaccines on market should still inoculate one from the COVID mutation, according to health experts. There were some updates this week in high-profile police brutality cases as well. It was announced in the Jacob Blake shooting from Wisconsin that no charges would be filed against the shooting police officer who shot Blake 7 times in the back as Blake walked away and was reaching into his car, with Rustin Chesky, the officer, being some distance away. 2 police officers from the Breonna Taylor shooting case in Kentucky were fired this week as well. Detective Joshua Janes, who secured the warrant into Taylor's home, and Detective Miles Cosgrove, who fired the shot that killed Taylor, were dismissed and have 10 days to appeal their dismissal. That's it for this week's show on the 25th Hour, helping you beat the 24/7 news cycle every Sunday afternoon. I ask that you please rate, subscribe, and share this podcast to your friends, and don't forget to become a patron today at patreon.com/the25thhournews. As always, you can email your tips and suggestions at the25thhournews@gmail.com. Follow us on most of your social media platforms and spread New York City soon to be top-rated political podcast. Have a great week.